This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Coming up, reviews, An Inconvenient Truth, The Queen, Destricted. I'm not quite sure how many of these we're going to get through. Talladega Nights, The Black Dahlia, all these movies coming up. It's a big bumper week coming through. Number 10 this week, Pulse.
Rubbish remake of a much better Asian movie.
Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest, number 9.
Orlando Bloom was on Extras last night, and he was a lot funnier in Extras than he is in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Volver.
As in returning. I thought it was great. Pedro Almodovar strikes gold again. I'm surprised he didn't win the award at Cannes.
Crank at 7.
Entertaining for about 20 minutes of Jason Statham having to keep completely revved up, otherwise he will die. But then after about 20 minutes, it sort of dies.
Wicker Man at 6.
Rubbish, 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 except for the line, Madam, step away from the bicycle.
Little Miss Sunshine at 5.
Fine, but nothing like as good as everyone says it is. There's a much darker comedy in there and they haven't quite found it.
Number 4 is The Sentinel.
Yeah, you said you had a question about
Sentinel. I saw The Sentinel going over the States at the weekend.
You saw it on the plane?
So here's
That's the way to see it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was fine. Yeah,
you can't walk out.
Nice way to spend a couple of hours. Yeah. What is the connection? Mm-hmm. I suspect you're not going to get this.
Okay.
And you've got the rest of the programme to think about it. And it's obviously open to the listeners.
Well. Okay.
What is the connection between The Sentinel, current Michael Douglas movie, and the recent crisis in the Labour Party?
Between The Sentinel and the recent crisis in the Labour Party?
Yes.
The Gordon Brown, Tony Blair business.
Yeah. Can you think of anything?
Michael Douglas is married to... What's the name in the film? Michael Douglas is having a ding-dong First Lady?
No. Anyway.
Okay.
Right at Your Door, number 3.
Tell you what, The Sentinel is the name of a horror movie from the 1980s, and is it that what the Labour Party are going through is like a 1980s horror movie? No. Moving on.
Absolutely not. It's far more precise than that. Right at Your Door at 3.
It's an interesting idea that does wear thin after a certain amount of time. It's an apocalyptic thriller, you know, all done on very, very small scale. And it's all right, but it's not as grueling as it ought to be. You'd open the door. Your wife knocks on the door. Basic premise, dirty bomb goes off, you're inside the house, your wife was outside, she knocks on the door, says, let me in. You say yes, film ends. So in order to prevent that happening, say, no.
No, you're not coming in. Little Man at 2.
Evil, bad, vile, and I think we have categorically possessed by the devil.
And if you go and see it, maybe you are indeed one
of Lucifer's hordes, as I think you were discussing with Tori Amos the other day.
You, me, yes, that's true. You, me and Dupree, this week's number one.
You know, there we are. Blandness once again rules the day. It's very bland. It's very, very bland.
So either go see one of those or try something that's new and sparkling.
Talladega Nights, the latest no-brainer from the team that brought you Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy. The tagline is very funny. It's got a picture of Will Ferrell, who I believe was on the programme the other day. Ferrell or Ferrell? What did he say?
Well, I wasn't here because I was coming back from America.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
I think it's Ferrell.
Anyway, Will Ferrell or Ferrell on the poster, picture of him wearing a racing car outfit, and the tagline is the story of a man who could only count to one, which is quite funny, you know.
That's quite good. Quite like that.
Fine, boom, boom. So he stars as a NASCAR racing driver, Ricky Bobby, who meets his match in a French racing car driver interested in jazz, gay, and played by Sacha Baron Cohen. Now, Sacha Baron Cohen is best known here, I suppose, as Ali G. He's also the voice of the King Leader in... what's it called? What's that animation film that's now in my brain? You know,
Over the Hedge?
No, not that one. The other one.
White, the Seven Dwarfs?
No, the one that Over the Hedge desperately wanted to be with. Madagascar. Madagascar. He plays the head of the little creatures in it. And he does lots of sort of funny accents. Anyway, he is the funniest thing in the film. Like all of these Will Ferrell movies, and I felt the same way about Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, all the best gags are in the trailer. If you've seen the trailer, you've seen all the best jokes. In fact, funnily enough, there is a version of a joke that was going to be the end of that clip in the trailer, which is done better in the trailer. The gag
I'm sure you would do it.
I'll do it, OK? So my impression of Sacha Baron Cohen doing an impression of...
Well, you were at school together, so...
I didn't know him. He was many years below me.
Oh, OK.
You know? I mean, I didn't know any of the people I went to school with because, of course, I didn't have any friends, as we all know.
You just sat in a room on your own.
I did, yeah. I was at school with Pete Bradshaw. I was at school with Dave Bedil. I was at school with Sacha Baron Cohen. I was still the guy in the corner. Anyway... he says, yes, France versus America. America has given us George Bush. France has given you the ménage à trois. And in the trailer, he says, game over. In the film, he doesn't actually say that. It's obviously a different take, because as with all these things, what they do is they get the comedy performers in front of the camera. They do 38 versions of it. It's great for the DVD extras, but it's not terrific for the film. Now, here's my problem. People love Will Ferrell, and they think he's fantastically funny and a great comedian, and there are high hopes for this thing he's got coming up, Stranger Than Fiction, which I think he may have talked about when he was on the show the other day. I think his comedy is incredibly broad and incredibly boring most of the time. And with the exception of the character in Zoolander, see, Zoolander was terrific. I did think Zoolander was very funny. And he plays the evil fashion designer in Zoolander who gets the best line in the movie, which is, you know, I feel like I'm taking stupid pills. Does anyone else but me notice everything he does is the same move? And in that, he's quite good. But the rest of the time, in Elf, he's incredibly gurning. In Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, he's incredibly gurning. Even in Melinda and Melinda, the Woody Allen film, which everyone said, look, this is where it would demonstrate that Will Ferrell is more than just a great big gurning oaf. I didn't buy it. And in Talladega Nights, we're right back where we started. It's already taken something like $142 million in the States. Look, cost $72 million. Where on earth the $72 million went is anybody's guess. It certainly didn't go in the script. And it's not bad. I mean, I laughed three or four times. As far as I remember, nearly all of those laughs were at Sacha Baron Cohen doing a funny French accent, which is not the biggest comedy stretch in the world, because let's face it, you put on a funny French accent, you say something borderline rude, it kind of gets a sniffle, a giggle. But I am worried about this, because I am worried that more and more great big mainstream dumbo American comedies are underperforming in terms of delivering the laughs. And we seem to be accepting a kind of low level of humour as what the benchmark should be. I have no doubt whatsoever that next week when we run down the top 10, Talladega Nights will be at number one. Although, of course, when it opened in America, the irony being, you know, he was a man who could only count up to number one. He went in at number two. You know, it was outperformed by...
That's the second best joke about the movie.
Exactly, it is. And it was outperformed by Snakes on a Plane, which is the film that everyone went to see because they were told that, hey, it was your opportunity to see the film first because the critics wouldn't see it first. So, what you have, as before, Sacha Baron Cohen doing the funniest bit in a movie in which doing the funniest bit isn't really saying that much. Sacha Baron Cohen, incidentally, has got this new movie, Borat, coming out.
Yes, which is causing a spot of bother.
Yeah. Well, I don't get it. Hey, what do I know? I have no sense of humour, apparently. But anyway, he is the funniest thing in the film. That's not that funny.
Not the greatest recommendation. But is it OK? But if you're talking bland comedy, is it better than You, Me and Dupree, if I'm going to choose between the two?
It's a tight-run thing, you know. Like, both of them are just... There's a couple of laughs. There's a few laughs... And there's a few great big langurs. In fact, funnily enough, I saw Talladega Nights...
How would I recognise a great big langur?
Well, I recognised it in the screening that I was in, because one of the critics, one of the leading British critics that I was sitting next to, was indeed in a state of asleepness and not entirely alert to all the subtleties that were going on. And as I looked over to him, I thought, you know, mate, not a bad decision, frankly.
Have you come up with the answer to our Sentinel Labour Party?
Is it anything to do with the fact that the Sentinel has got a story in it about Michael Douglas having a ding-dong with the First Lady, or is it far more obvious than that? Is it anything to do with Catherine Zeta-Jones, Catherine Beta Blocker, no?
No, we'll do the answer in a moment. Okay. And thanks for all the Viking texts.
This is a podcast from BBC Radio's news and sports station,
5Live.
To find out more about 5Live and its sister service, 5Live Sports Extra, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5Live.
The answer, the connection between the Sentinel and the labour crisis is just made me laugh out loud when I was watching it on the movie. The actress Blair Brown features in the movie.
Oh, very good.
Fancy, but if you Google Blair Brown, you get nowhere near
Blair Brown.
What Blair Brown looks like. Plays the National Security Advisor.
Very good.
What an extraordinary name to have at
it
the
is.
Moment.
Yes, it is.
We should get her on.
Yes. Just to interview her about her name. Yeah. I think she would be cross about that, don't you?
Do you reckon? Yeah, not interested in your work. Let's just talk about
your name. No, but your name's really funny.
So, Talladega Nights, we have not bothered with that. What else is
that? The Queen, the behind-the-scenes story of the ructions between Buckingham Palace and 10 Downing Street around the time of the death of Princess Diana. Two splendid performances, one of which won an award at the Venice Film Festival by Helen Mirren as the Queen, obviously, and Michael Sheen as Tony Blair. And he did Blair before in that TV production, The Deal, which was about the Blair
which had
Brown
crisis. Dave Morrissey was Gordon Brown, which he had to pork out for.
And he then went on to lose that weight for Basic Instinct 2. Currently available on video. And believe me, it's a much better film than most critics gave it.
So Michael Sheen is repeating his kind of...
But he does a very good Tony Blair. I mean, he's clearly a very good mimic. If you saw the Kenneth Williams that he did as well, that was absolutely terrific. And he's very, very good as Tony Blair.
I thought it was a very interesting impression. If he makes him a bit of an idiot,
Yes, it does make him a bit of an idiot, but in the context...
he clearly isn't.
No.
But in the, it's another issue, but he's clearly not an idiot.
In the context of this, it's not the same... I mean, it's not the same character as the character in The Deal. But there are definitely similarities in the portrayal. The portrayal here is a lot less broad. The thing with The Deal was, I think it was playing much more for satire, much more as a sort of, you know, sarky riposte to that, which is exactly what that situation deserved. In this case, it's dealing with a subject matter which is slightly more melancholic, obviously, and perhaps slightly more touchy, because we are still slightly more touchy, both about the royal family and, of course, about the Diana tragedy. There is a lot of the news footage of the trauma surrounding Diana's death, which it is funny how even just a funny peculiar as opposed to funny ha-ha, just seeing clips of that news footage, of that outpouring of national grief, it's incredible how much it just provokes a knee-jerk reaction and you find yourself welling up. It's such a strange event. So much has been written about it, but it is still such a strange event. And actually, one of the themes of the film is that the Queen and those around her are completely unprepared for what happens when that event happens. And a lot of the movie is to do with they don't know how to deal with it. The government, who, you know, with their whole New Labour agenda and their modern agenda and dealing with the press, do somehow understand how to take the national mood. And it's about the dynamic between 10 Downing Street and Buckingham Palace. In fact, calling the thing the Queen does it something of an injustice. It should really be called, you know, Liz and Tony, or perhaps Liz and Tony and Di, because it is really about those two characters. My problems, however, are this. It originated as a made-for-TV production for Granada TV, and I have to say that I think it is still better served on television, despite the fact there's a quote on the poster from a leading British film critic that says the best film of the year. It isn't. Whether or not it's a film is actually open to question. I mean, I'm not questioning for 1 minute Stephen Frears is a person who can work in different mediums, but I don't think it's particularly cinematic. I think, actually, it's very televisual. And had I seen it on television, I would have no reservations about it at all. In the cinema, I think it is slightly swamped and its shortcomings are slightly more apparent than they ought to be.
Should we wait for it to turn up on the smallest Odeon screen possible?
No, wait for it and to turn up on television. I mean, it's already... I mean, the thing is, because of the subject matter, because if you remember what happened to Mrs. Brown, which to all intents and purposes was a sort of televisual film anyway, and then, of course, Her Majesty Mrs. Brown, as they in the American advert, Her Majesty Mrs. Brown. They loved doing that. It was one of
those
so... bizarre,
but that was one of those things you go, you pay your £5 or whatever, and the first thing you see on the screen is BBC Scotland.
But that... Now, that in itself is not a bad thing, because the BBC have produced and, you know, financed many very, very cinematic films. I just don't happen to think that this is one of them. I mean, there's also a case recently where there was the Antonia Bird made-for-TV production, The Hamburg Cell, which was about, you know, the events leading up to 9/11, which I thought was crying out to be in the cinema. And actually, that, you know, that was straight to the television, and I think that could have done with a theatrical platform. So I suspect that actually... when we get out into America, I mean, clearly it's done very, very well at Venice. Critics over here have been very, very fond of it. I think it will do well in America, partly because just the subject matter that it's dealing with, people still have an interest in. I don't know that it really should be in the cinema. I think it's better served on television.
One critic I was reading, not actually a film critic, just someone who'd seen it, who had a bit of an...
Everyone's a critic nowadays.
Okay, so that's true. But none quite so entertaining or forthright.
Thank you.
So that actually, clearly, the intention of this film was to be anti-monarchist. That's what this picture is saying. But that you still leave the film thinking the Queen, you know, she's pretty extraordinary.
I don't actually think that it is clearly anti-monarchist. I think you come out of it thinking, as I suspect a lot of anti-monarchists do, that the establishment of the monarchy is old hat and outmoded and all the rest of it. But the Queen herself is... I mean, it's really funny. Recently, they interviewed John Lydon. And forgive me if I'm misquoting him, but I think John Lydon said, when I did God Save the Queen, it wasn't her, it was the institution. I actually don't think she's all bad. I think that's what he said. If I'm misquoting him, I apologise. But I think there's a lot of people who think that. And I think that Helen Mirren's portrait of the Queen is a very good portrait of somebody dealing with... the word they keep using, an unprecedented crisis in which the Constitution has come up against, well, not the Constitution, you know, the rigmarole has come up against a circumstance which it couldn't possibly imagine. How do you fly the flag over Buckingham Palace at half mast when the Queen isn't in Buckingham Palace? And the rules say if she's not in Buckingham Palace, you don't fly the flag. And the frisson, the interest, is in Tony Blair and his people coming from this whole new media-friendly zone and dealing with these ructions relations with the royal family. And in fact, in the scenes, as I think you heard there, between Tony Blair and the Queen, Helen Mirren's version of the Queen comes out of it with her head held higher than Michael Sheen's version of Tony Blair. But I still think it's a TV movie.
Russell Oliver Brooklands on this email says, Simon, a point of order. It's become commonplace over the past few months for your Friday afternoon correspondents to address or refer to Mark as the good doctor.
Yeah.
Is this truly how he would like to be seen, or would he really prefer to be thought of as the bad doctor, but in a good way?
Well, yeah, that's good. The bad doctor, but in a good way.
It's not that pithy, is it?
No. But I did once have, I wanted to have a thing on my door when I got my doctorate, PhD, you know, whatever it is. I wanted to have
We've
a thing.
We've all got
those. No, I know we all have, except for the Vikings amongst us. I wanted to have a sign which said, the doctor is in a kind of in way.
Got it.
Okay.
Work that one out. Mayo at bbc.co.uk. More recommendations or otherwise. To count remaining time before 4 o'clock, we will, Mark will pontificate about An Inconvenient Truth, the Al Gore movie. Al Gore was on the programme last week. Find out what Mark thinks about it as a cinematic experience fairly shortly. Also, the Black Dahlia coming up. What else is new?
Well, shall we do Inconvenient Truth now, actually, since you just flagged it up? And actually, it does tie into something I was just talking about with the Queen. It's okay. We're not going to run a clip from it.
Let's hear Al in all his glory.
I don't have a clip from it. That's why we're not going to. But I can do Al for you.
I'll do an Al impression.
You know, I did. Podcasters are going to absolutely love this. Having done Sacha Baron Cohen doing the Frenchman in Talladega Nights, you know, hey, Ricky Bobby, we give you this and this is what you get. And so now, Al Gore on the subject of global warming. The world is getting incredible.
No, that bit's you now.
So here's the problem. An Inconvenient Truth, Al Gore's documentary about global warming, which apparently is going to destroy the world in a very short period of time. I believe it. I know. Totally in favour of, you know, global warming, bad thing. Okay, carbon emissions, bad thing. All that bad thing, yes, I agree. I was in Cannes when Al Gore stood up at the beginning of this screening, and I didn't even realise it was Al Gore in the room, because that man has had a charisma bypass of some extraordinary magnitude. And he stood up and he said, I cannot believe that a PowerPoint lecture that I used to give has been awarded a place at the Cannes Film Festival. I'm thinking, you don't believe it. I'm sitting here and I agree with everything in the film. But you know what, Al? I'm starting to understand how that election thing happened. He introduced himself very humorously, and he does this in the film, as I'm, you know, the person who used to be the next president of America. That's his joke. That's the one ray of humorous sunshine.
That's not true. There's a couple of other jokes in there which I thought were quite good.
Where?
He talks, he makes a couple of jokes at the expense of the current administration.
Like, that's really hard.
Well, at least he does it. I mean, here's a man who you could say, you could quite logically argue, could have become the most embittered man in political history.
He's too boring to be embittered.
He won. He won the popular vote.
Yeah, he's still too boring to be embittered.
I'm just saying maybe you should give him credit for actually having made something creative with his life.
I think one could ask a sensible question about how was it that that election ended up so close? And one of the answers, you know, that the people give is, well, obviously, you know, it's to do with corruption. The other answer is that actually the side that some people wanted to win weren't fighting their corner perhaps as enthusiastically as they could do, because they were fronting somebody who was not as charismatic as the previous. I mean, I don't want to get into the politics of this, but I want to discuss this as a film. Here's the problem. It's not a film. It is a PowerPoint lecture delivered on celluloid. All the arguments are completely correct, completely coherent. Amazingly, Arnold Schwarzenegger went to see it and it changed his life, because Schwarzenegger didn't believe anything about global warming until he saw it in a film, and then he suddenly believed, oh dear, the world is heating up, I had better slap down. Fine, Arnold, the rest of us were there 10 years ago, but I'm really glad you've caught up. And for you alone, for the governor of California, for the, what do they call him, the governator, I'm thrilled that the movie had that kind of reaction. For the rest of us, it will attract an audience of people who know this already. If you put it on television as a documentary that people would stumble across by accident without getting out of their homes, getting a bus, going to the cinema, paying their £7 to see it, fine. In the cinema, it's not a film.
I mean,
it's a lecture. And it's a lecture given by somebody who makes Michael Moore suddenly make sense. I mean, it's a terrible thing to say, but I agree with everything Al Gore's saying in this movie, but I just had to keep pinching myself to wake up and agree with him.
Well, maybe I'm spoiled, and I admit I didn't pay money before.
I didn't pay money either.
The movie and then interviewing Al Gore. Sure. But me and Tim Smith from Radio 2 were planning to leave after an hour, and we didn't, because we were captivated and thought it was pretty interesting.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you, Tim Smith, and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That's not a bad.
$23 million worth of American fee-paying punters. So apparently there is a market for it out there in America. I just, you know, it's like making a documentary that's entire target audience is people who know this already. Can you imagine anyone who, other than Arnold Schwarzenegger, who feels ambiguous on the subject of global warming, saying, I've got an evening free. What can I do? I can go and see Talladega Nights with that guy from Madagascar saying, hey, right. Vicky Bobby. You know what? No, I'll go and be bored by Al Gore.
What else is new, Doctor?
Destricted is this great big controversial collection of hardcore shorts, controversial because they've been passed by the BBFC with an uncut 18 certificate. A group of respected artists and filmmakers, Sam Taylor Wood, Gaspar Noé, Larry Clark, were told to make short films, and the qualifications were they had to be short, they had to be explicit, and they had to be legal. And they've all gone off and done it. As you would imagine with a portmanteau collection, it's a very, very mixed bag. Some of them are funny. There's a very funny little short about the erotic rituals of the Balkans, which is done in a sort of Monty Python fashion, which I laughed at. Some of it is incredibly po-faced. Sam Taylor Wood's film of a man onanizing in Death Valley is exactly what it says on the packet. Some of it is incredibly indulgent and reprehensible, such as Gaspar Noé's thing. And I really like Gaspar Noé as a filmmaker, but his section is awful. The section that everyone's talking about is the Larry Clark section, in which Larry Clark apparently is making a film that's about the mainstreaming of pornography, in which he interviews a selection of young men and then they interview a selection of porn stars, and then all credibility goes out the window as the pornographic acts start happening in front of the camera, and you're just left thinking, I'm sorry, dirty old men, keep it out of my face. Here's my brief version of this. The first one, which is by Matthew Barney, which consists of a man becoming very well acquainted with a 2-ton caterpillar truck and a large root vegetable. You know what? I've never seen anything like it before. I'll never see anything like it again. Don't want to. Not interested. Hardcore pornography? Fine. Can we all just get over it now? Can we all just get over it? You know, fine. If you want it, fine. Please stop pretending it's art.
Was the truck okay?
I don't know. I didn't speak to the truck afterwards. Apparently, it's a metaphor for the raping of the rainforest.
Is it? Is it?
Yeah, well, that was exactly the phrase that I use. Is it
now? I'm going to see Al Gore again.
Much more interesting, although not without its flaws. The Black Dahlia, a new movie by Brian De Palma. Back on form, some say. Brian De Palma directed Dressed to Kill, obviously. He directed Scarface, The Untouchables, big hits. Then he directed a string of movies which were not big hits. Snake Eyes, Mission to Mars. His most recent movie before this, Femme Fatale, actually ended up going straight to video, didn't even make it to the inside of a cinema. This is in a climate, incidentally, in which Inconvenient Truth and things are opening in cinemas. The Brian De Palma movie didn't even make it into the cinema, which is a shame because Femme Fatale is one of the best things he'd done for a long time. Black Dahlia, adaptation of writing of James Ellroy, who's perhaps best known as through LA Confidential. Setting is 1940s Hollywood. It's inspired by a real-life murder in which a young woman was horribly murdered. And around this is spun a story with two cops, one played by Aaron Eckhart, one played by Josh Hartnett, and a pulchritudinous woman played by Scarlett Johansson. And for the record, she says Johansson. It was originally down to be directed by David Fincher, but it is definitely un film de Brian De Palma. Un film de Palma. So it doesn't quite work, does it?
Not really.
Okay, fine. What I mean by that is it looks great. The set design is terrific. You really get the sense of it being LA, despite the fact that it's actually shot in Bulgaria. Very, very good set design. The camera moves fluidly through these incredibly balletic orchestral moves. Everybody is placed because of the way they look. Every shot seems to be a reference to a Hitchcock movie or to a Dario Argento giallo film. Everything sounds nice, looks great, but there's no substance to it. It's a funny thing with Brian De Palma. Everything about him is visual, unlike LA Confidential, which manages to do the style and the period setting and also gives you some sense of real characters really having real experiences amidst all this. With De Palma, what you get is a sense of cinema. It's just about... Now, it is particularly apropos because of what I was saying about The Queen not being particularly cinematic and Inconvenient Truth not being a film. Whatever else Black Dahlia is, it is a film. It is a film first and foremost. The problem for me is it's all on the surface. It's all on the visuals. The most interesting point about it is that there's a central idea in which the girl who you first meet when she's dead is seen in audition movie reels, in which she is playing a young wannabe starlet who is being bullied off screen by the director. The director played, incidentally, by Brian De Palma. You don't see him, you only hear his voice. And those moments in the film are actually getting towards something like an emotional truth. And what they do is...
Is it an inconvenient emotional truth?
No, it's a very convenient emotional truth that is inconveniently lacking from the rest of the movie, but well done, because I'm cross at myself that I didn't get there first. Looks great, sounds great, smells great, just doesn't have a lot of substance, and has an absolutely bonkers performance by Fiona Shaw in it, which is hysterical to the max, for which some people have blamed the actress. Believe me, no one does nuts performances in Brian De Palma films without Brian De Palma telling them to do it.
We ought to mention next week's movie reviews are inconvenient. This is another inconvenient truth. On Wednesday,
yes,
this is because the Ryder Cup is on Friday. We're not doing it Thursday because of books. In Wednesday, you're going to be in San Francisco interviewing George Lucas. I hope you tell him that he can't direct his way out of a paper bag.
But not about his
films. But before that, you're going to be live with us.
I am. 7 o'clock in the morning, my time.
Movie reviews between 3 and 4 next Wednesday. Movie of the week.
Oh, it's a tough one, isn't it?
You haven't got a lot of time.
Probably Black Dahlia, to be honest.
That'll have to do then. We're back tomorrow. Oh, no. I think we'll be back on Monday at 1. Drivers next.
6:06. Hi, Alan. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Oh, you can tell by the tone of somebody's voice, you know, whether they've had a good day or a bad day.
I am absolutely disgusted. Utterly useless.
Absolutely ecstatic, Sunderland fans.
Just wanted to vent my frustrations out on the Arsenal today.
I think I'm on cloud nine.
Absolutely appalling performance. I just despair as a man. Frustrated, basically.
What a great team spirit we seem to have within the side.
6:06.
The UK's biggest football debate. Saturday, Sunday and Wednesday on 5 Live. You can also have your say anytime by calling the Rant Line.
08700 100 500.
Never rate us off.
Or on the 6:06 message board. Go to bbc.co.uk/5live.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.